This episode of Behind the Bots is brought to you by Fingertech Robotics, North America's top manufacturer of combat robotics parts. If you're interested in building your first combat robot, check out Fingertech's Viper Kit, which includes everything you need to build a fully functional, competitive Antweight. Fingertech also carries a complete line of wheels, hubs, motors, and other components if you want to build a bot from the ground up. Check them out online at www.fingertechrobotics.com. From the Mid-Hudson Valley Broadcast Studio at IBM Poughkeepsie, this is Behind the Bots, the podcast that brings you the stories of the builders behind BattleBots. I'm Chris.
I'm Luke.
I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Kyle.
And on the podcast, our interview with blacksmith captain Al Kindle.
We'll wrap up the show with this week's Combat Robotics event calendar. If you like our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, CastBox, Player FM, and Podbean. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Behind the Bots and Twitter as well. And you can check out our website at www.behindthebots.com. If you like what you hear, tell a friend. We really appreciate your support.
Time for this week's Combat Robotics News. I have 7-ish news items for you today. We have just like so much news that happened this week. They officially announced the new season like through the Hollywood Reporter, and all of these teams came out and just generated a huge amount of news. So I'm kind of squishing these together. So depending on your definition, 7, 8, 9, I don't even know.
If it's not 7, Leo is going to come for you.
Leo, keep me honest.
Yeah.
First up, the field of new and returning robots to the now confirmed season 5 of the show continues to grow. BattleBot supporters this week got early access to the first 30 robots that will be competing this season. Now, we will not be talking about those secret robots because we are all Facebook supporters, and I don't know, you should go become a Facebook supporter if you're really, really curious. However, that said, there are a small number of robots that have publicly confirmed either on our show or on Facebook. So we will be talking about those. There are currently 8 new teams that have publicly confirmed. So those teams are Apollo, Ferocity, Gloomweaver, Painsaw, Pardon My French, Ripper, The Spirit of Taga, and South Korea's first team to ever compete on BattleBots, Team Orby.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I want to call out two.
Blade.
Yeah. I want to call out two of these, and I guess we can talk about the others if you want to. But first up, I want to call out Ferocity, made by returning captain Julia Chernyshevich. This week, she released new renderings of her dragon-themed heavyweight. She and one of her teammates, Antoine, appeared on the latest episode of Breaking Bots, where they revealed they had originally designed a heavyweight walker bot, but decided to instead build an 8-wheel design in the interest of time and budget. The renderings they published on Facebook this week are so cool. Have you seen these? It's like the purple...
It's
dragon
so cool.
Themed, right?
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's not like anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah, yeah. I'll try and explain it. So like there is a horizontal bar spinner, but it's mounted on an arm that rotates. So one end of the arm has a wedge and the other end has this spinning weapon. And the head is made to look like a dragon, so they can turn the orientation of the weapon to always be pointing toward their opponent. So that makes it really difficult for their opponents to kind of eat at these many wheels that the robot has. I'm really excited about this. It sounds like such a cool robot to watch.
I mean, I know we don't know all the bots that are coming to the show yet, but I have to say, of what I know... Like, this is the bot I'm really most excited to see. It's so cool, and it's like potential capabilities are really, really interesting, and I think will make for fun and exciting matches. And I think that Julia is so brilliant that I have total faith in her and her team to actually make a bot that can deliver on, you know, its plans. And I'm so excited to see it.
Now, in late-breaking news, so we record this on Sunday nights. This one just got published by BattleBots. Gloomweaver, so stoked about this. This is the first of 3 heavyweight, super heavyweight Walker bots that Greg said were trying to make it in time for the April taping. So this is being built by Miles Pakala from Team Good Robots for Cool People, who competed in 2018 with my favorite robot of all time, Battle Royale with Cheese. I don't think there's two more different robots in the entire world from like a cheeseburger-themed robot to like this super metal, like spider walker bot that shoots fire and eats its opponents. Like, I am so stoked about Gloomweaver. Kyle, thoughts on the renderings?
So it's way updated from the little sneak peek that Miles was kind enough to give me a few weeks ago when I was talking to him about this bot. At that point, this bot was like 375 is what it was ringing in at weight-wise. This looks way heavier. I think they're really pushing it towards the 500-pound weight limit with this thing. It looks like it's designed specifically for verts, for vertical spinners. And I think that it's kind of design intent is to break that meta. But as some people have pointed out on Facebook already, I'm a little concerned about what's going to happen when it faces horizontals. And I certainly hope they bring extra legs.
Right. Yeah. I feel like it's just from the rendering, it looks complicated. Like,
oh God, yes.
Like, you know, the two legs in the front are, they've kind of like angled the bot down, but I'm assuming you can kind of like stand the bot all the way up and it can turn around and everything. Like, that's pretty sophisticated motion. My big question, and I'm sure we'll have a Walker bot designer on here in the next couple of weeks / months, but how do you even program that into like a traditional remote control, you know, like
all the legs?
Yeah, no, how do I get the, you know, the front of my bot to go down while the back of my bot is up, you know, turning around? Like, you know, there's a pretty sophisticated amount of programming that goes into that. So a lot of challenges. I'm really hoping we'll see one, if not all three, and Gloomweaver looks pretty cool. Sadly, not every team that was accepted to the show will be making it. This week, Luke Falkingham announced that his angled horizontal spinner, Valhalla Express, had pulled out of the competition due to time and budget constraints. Instead, Luke will be joining the Voyee brothers on Team Wee Wee and work on their bot, pardon my French.
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
I don't know. I guess. I don't speak French.
Je suis la jeune fille.
Oh, my God. You guys are so much more classy than I am.
Où est la fromage?
Okay, I do know that one. I want to give you three quick updates to some returning teams. First up, BattleBots released new renderings of Duck 3.0. Hal Rucker continues to iterate on his tough little lifter bot. This year, he's taking inspiration from one of his earlier designs, Black Widow, and bringing a totally redesigned version of Duck to the competition with a center-mounted lifting beak with what appears to be permanent wedges.
Yeah, it looks like it's really going to take the duck flailing, you know, thing that we saw last season out of the equation.
Right.
You know, when he's actually tumbling that, you know, that front shield and beak, which kind of just made him look helplessly flopping about the box. This looks like it's going to be, you know, a much more pointed weapon that he'll hopefully be able to use to leverage, you know, other bots out of the box.
Yeah.
I have to admit, when I saw the rendering of Duck, it actually is like a three-angled picture, so it looks like three distinct ducks. And with the name Duck 3.0, I thought he was bringing a duck multibot of three smaller ducks. And I was so excited. I was so excited. And then after I looked at it for a couple of minutes, it dawned on me that, oh, that's just literally different angles of the bot, not like three iterations of it. And it was really sad. But I do think that it looks pretty cool. And I'm excited to see how it can hopefully improve over the other versions of itself.
A flock of ducks would have been pretty cool, though.
Ooh.
But you only call a group of ducks a flock if they're in flight. Otherwise, they're called a raft.
What?
What?
Mm-hmm. That is so perfect. Or you can see ducks together?
Yeah.
Oh, it does look like a raft.
You can also call them a paddling.
That's so great.
The more you know.
Next up, the team behind the scary overhead bar spinner Bloodsport this week published photos of a new three-pointed blade cut by Team Waiachi. Team captain Justin Marple has had good success with the tri-blade design on his Beetleweight Zero Traction, which recently took home first place at the Ontario Bot Brawl. And finally, Bombshell teammates Randy Farmer and Jason Brown are joining Craig Danby and Team Mobot this season, seeing how Bombshell is taking a break from competition in 2020. Last but not least, I have two very minor updates from the world of Hexbugs. First up, no announcement yet on new BattleBots Hexbugs coming out this year. However, no despair, right? Their announcement last year came in June, so like right in the middle of filming season. So we have still a couple more months. But they did exhibit at New York Toy Fair this week, and they announced something slightly robotic that I am just obsessed with. I think it's so cute, called JunkBots. Have you seen this, junkbots.com?
Yeah, you sent the link to us earlier today.
Okay, all right. Let me, I'm just going to pitch this to you because, I mean, I just think it's so cool. And I don't know, people who listen to this podcast might have kids and be into this. It's a blind box. They have 36 of these blind boxes. They're shaped like little trash cans. You open up the trash can and it's filled with trash bags. And your kids open up the trash bags, dump them all out onto the table. There's all sorts of like little trash pieces in there. And you dig through it and you find robot parts that you can clip together and make unique robots out of all of the different robot parts. It's so cool. I'm like really into this. Lindsay, you look skeptical.
Is it all robot parts or is it like some of it just like old banana peels?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it's trash.
Wait.
You rip open a bag of trash, you dump it out onto the table and you sift through the trash looking for robot parts.
Does it come with a tetanus shot?
So they're just reselling trash.
Well, no, I mean, like, it's like
toy little, trash.
Yeah, like little
it's
plastic
fabricated.
Bones.
It's
like
just,
little,
oh. It's just like bags filled with choking hazards and then the occasional robot part.
I suppose I didn't really think of that through, but yes, that's true. Yeah, so like little plastic cheeseburgers, little
okay.
Like plastic, you know, I don't know, fish bones and stuff. But
cute.
Yeah, it's like a cute concept.
It's like a Junkyard Wars. Is that what it was called?
You mean the greatest show of all time next to BattleBots?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just finished on a high note, I guess, on a fun note. Hexbugs also published a little game on social media where you can come up with your own BattleBots team name based on the first letter of your name and your birth month.
Ooh.
So you curious?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I've stolen all of our identities because I'm going to reveal our birth months now. I looked these up. Okay. Chris, are you curious what yours is?
Yeah. I'd love to hear it.
Okay. All right. Your robot, according to this, is a crushing bot.
Okay.
Awful.
Cool.
It's terrible.
That's like more a description than a name.
Yeah. All right.
Like, oh, this is a crushing bot.
Starting on.
And everyone will be crushing on my bot.
Ooh.
Kyle, your robot will be called Furious Rampage.
Mm.
Ooh.
Yeah, I like that. You know,
it's like a John Wick movie.
Lindsay, yours is meteorological. Yours is Screaming Tornado.
Nice.
Pretty good.
It just makes me think of me in the kitchen.
And seeing how I share a first letter with Lindsay and a birth month with Kyle, mine is the Screaming Rampage. However, I was looking through this list, and I can now say definitively that if your first name starts with W and you were born in February, you've got the best bot name.
What is it?
Sparkle Hammer. Come on.
Ooh.
You guys.
Yeah, that's where it's at.
When we build a robot to bring to BattleBots, we got to call it Sparkle Hammer. That's such a good name.
No. Okay. R, if you begin with the letter R,
okay.
And your birth month is June, you are the Sonic Pegasus.
What?
That's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty
that
good.
Is pretty
Which
great.
Is actually the second fastest of all Pegasus.
So there's like Screaming Pegasus, like just, it's Crushing Pegasus.
Hidden Pegasus.
Oh my God.
The Dairy Intolerant Pegasus?
All right. You heard it here first. We're going to call our heavyweight Sparkle Hammer. I'm really into it. And that's it for this week's news.
After the break, our interview with blacksmith Captain Al Kindle.
This week on the podcast, we have a very special guest, blacksmith Captain Al Kindle. Welcome to the show, Al.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
We are so happy to have you here on the show. Blacksmith is one of the most recognizable and popular BattleBots, and getting the opportunity to sit down with you for the next 30 minutes to kind of learn more about your story is something we've really been looking forward to. I'm interested in going all the way back to your beginnings with combat robotics. Can you tell us your earliest memories of combat robotics, like back in the mid-90s?
Sure. It was sometime in 1994. I had seen a television program on Discovery Channel, ironically. It was called The Next Step, and they would do random segments on events and different technology-related things. And one of their segments they did that year was Robot Wars in San Francisco, about this guy named Mark Thorpe and this event that he was running. And some of the early competitors were The Master, you know, built by Mark Satrakian. And I thought that was the coolest thing I had ever seen, that people were getting together and fighting these radio-controlled vehicles. Me and my friend John, who's actually still currently my teammate, we have been involved with RC racing for quite a while, dirt oval and off-road buggy and that sort of thing. So that was kind of where we came from. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, I got to do this. And so in 1995, we all piled in a old mail truck, believe it or not, some kind of 70s horrible AMC Jeep mail truck that could barely get out of its own way. And me and my two friends drove to San Francisco, and we competed with Dawn Patrol. And that was my first ever combat robot, and that was our first event.
I'm so curious. So like back in 1994, you obviously didn't have the internet. You didn't have like kind of build videos to read, like build diaries. How did you figure out how to build your first robot?
That was one of the things back then that, in a way, I think those first two or three Robot Wars events in some ways were better than what we're doing now, because you're exactly right. Nobody knew what would work. Nobody knew what would win. You know, when you heard the word combat robot, it was like, you didn't have Byte Force as a frame of reference or Tombstone. There was nothing. It was like, well, what am I going to do? And the first thing that pops in your head are the terrible ideas like chainsaws and saw blades. And, you know, Dawn Patrol was a lawnmower engine and three saw blades and kitty car gearboxes. I had no spares because, you know, why would you? And it was a pretty terrible bot, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, the event was awesome. It was a great event to be there, the witness. And luckily there's some videos out there on YouTube where, because it didn't get a lot of coverage really. And it's not like you can go somewhere and rent the DVDs or something. So, I mean, it is out there though, but it's kind of, there's not much.
So back in 1995, you had just graduated high school. Is that correct? So like you're a teenager driving across country in a rickety mail truck, you know, like it just seems like such a big adventure, you know, like had you ever been to California before? Like, you know, can you talk about that experience driving out?
No, I don't think any of us had been to California. And honestly, I hadn't been too much out of the state up to that point. And we all graduated in 91, and my two friends had just gotten it was the summer, so I think it was either between college, they were still in courses, and I was going to classes locally, so it was in the middle of the summer, so it's the only reason that we were able to, because the whole event took two and a half weeks, because we drove, so it took like a week to get out there. The event wasn't that long, it was like 2 or 3 days. And then another week to drive home. So, yeah, it's not something that you can do now when you're an adult and have real jobs and stuff. So that was kind of what made it interesting also.
The competition itself, I didn't get to see it myself, although I'm really bummed. I feel like I would have had a lot of fun. But, like, what was it like there in the pits? Like, what was it like competing in the arena? Can you kind of take us through that experience?
The pits, I would kind of liken more to like a modern day NERC event. or I would assume some of the other club events would be. Not as much organized chaos as BattleBots is, but more of and again, it's because nobody really knew what they were doing yet. So it was pretty safe. The safety was pretty good. The arena itself was, if you looked at it by today's standards, you would it was hysterical because it kind of looked like a hockey rink.
Right.
And it had like the plexiglass or Lexan that went up about 6 feet or so. And that was it. There was no roof, no ceiling, nothing on top. And I know the first season they handed out safety glasses to the audience. I don't even remember that for the second one, but I think that's because the first year they didn't even have the plexiglass up top.
Wow.
So, and I don't know if you remember, there was Blendo was there, which was built by Jamie from Mythbusters.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I have memories of Jamie before anybody knew who Jamie was. And basically, Blendo was a ICE shell spinner that was obscenely powerful for the time. Like, no, there was nothing else like that. And basically, halfway through, they kind of asked him to not compete because he was throwing stuff too far and hard. Somebody was going to die. And there was also another bot called the Mulcher that they wouldn't even let start that not many people know about. It was like a lawnmower kicked up at a 45-degree angle. So they literally, it was a lawnmower, the bottom of a lawnmower built into this weird frame. And there's a video of that somewhere, too, doing a little demo and cutting up some foam. So it was a learning curve because, again, nobody, the event runners didn't know what would show up. And, you know, some people were a little ahead of the curve with dangerous stuff. And but most stuff was, you know, mine, Dawn Patrol, I had the lawnmower engine on it. I had no radio control on the throttle. So it was a pull start. So I pull started it, cranked the throttle, and ran.
Wow.
And yeah, it was fun. And Jamie starting Blendo, he was in the arena with standing on a 2x4 with an electric drill, starting the top of Blendo. And same thing. When that started, it would shake a little bit. He grabbed the 2x4 and run. And so yeah, it was fun.
Now, I remember reading that there was, like, this giant, like, wrecking ball, like a pendulum that was swinging inside of the arena. Is that right?
Yeah, they had, like, a bowling ball that would swing back and forth in the middle. And there was powered pneumatic flippers, like big flippers that would knock you around. And there were these nets that kind of came out that they were flat, but they kind of looked like a hockey net almost. They would kind of come down on you and trap you and stuff like that. So there was arena hazards. They weren't anything like the BattleBots hazards would eventually become in the Comedy Central days, but you know, there was something there.
Now, how many times did you make the trip out to California in those early Robot Wars years?
Twice. I did 95 was our first, and 96 I went out there with Enforcer, which was a smaller light featherweight at the time, which was 60 pounds, I think. I'm not even sure. The first year was 85 pounds, Dawn Patrol, which was middleweight at the time. I think heavyweight at the time was only 120 pounds. So the classes were a little bit different then.
Yeah. Now, between the two robots, you know, you came back, you redesigned it. You know, did you bring back like a lot of ideas from that 95 event that you put into your 96 bot, Enforcer?
First thing you learn is it had to be invertible or able to self-right. And that's something that I think is basic stuff today. And that had my second fight ever was against La Machine. And that was, as you know, that was Greg and Trey.
Yeah. Right.
So I've, you know, I go back to with Greg and Trey since 1995. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. They beat me in like 8 seconds. Because they just kind of shoved me up on my side, and I was like, oh, yeah, that ain't going to work. You have to be able to flip yourself over or run upside down, and the first Enforcer in 96 could run upside down. So,
was it difficult cleaning all of the PAM off of your robot?
No, I had my own oil shooting out everywhere, so it was
just yeah, blended right in.
Yeah, there's a part in the we did a rumble, which was pretty fun. And at one point, I think it was the net came down and it pulled my oil cap out. You could see oil just shooting out of the top.
That's awesome.
So after the 96 event, you know, come back home. Like, what's the next robot that you build after that? I mean, coming out to California, kind of like difficult to do, you know, like on a regular basis. Can you talk us through what you built next?
I started working on a new version of Enforcer for whatever Robot Wars I was going to hit next. I skipped 97 just for whatever reason. I just didn't get the bot done. And then I was getting ready for 98, and that's when all that nonsense went down with the lawsuit and Plotnicki and Profile Records and and all that kind of killed that for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But, and that robot just kind of sat in the basement until 2000 when BattleBots hit again, or hit for the first time, rather. And so we went with Enforcer in 2000 in Las Vegas, which was season two at the time of the Comedy Central era. So that was our first BattleBots event.
Awesome. Was that event very different from your experience in 95 and 96? Was it bigger? Was it, you know, like it's on TV and the whole thing, you know, can you talk about the differences like over those 4 years?
Oh yeah, it was a different world because it was TV. It was back then, it was still an open tournament. Basically you had to apply, pay an entry fee and you went, and it was a different format than it is now and obviously we didn't even make the TV rounds. We won one match, but we lost our second. And the way it worked back there, you had to get like two or three rounds in before it was really filmed for TV. Mm-hmm. So, but they let, the way I usually describe it is back then it was a bot event filmed for TV, whereas now it's more of a TV show about a bot event.
Right.
And so I think it's a better show now, don't get me wrong. And I think when I went back in 2000, I believe there was 200, 250 bots already. Ooh. And then the next couple seasons, they got up to around 300-400, I believe. Wow. We only went for that one season back then because it was just, you know, it was cost prohibitive for, you know, at the time, my age, what I was doing. I didn't have a lot of resources at the time. So, you know, it just kind of let that one go for a couple of years. And
yeah. Now, in 2000, a bunch of people on the East Coast also formed the Northeast Robotics Club. Can you tell us about that club? Like, when did you get involved in it, and kind of like what were some of the early goals for the club? Like back almost 20 years ago, or I guess yes, 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's crazy when you think about where we are and how old I am. but yeah, the first, what I consider the first NERC event, it really wasn't a NERC event yet. It was in October of, was it in October? It was in September or October of 2000. So it was actually right before we went out to BattleBots. It was Andrew Lindsay. He had put on a little 12-pound event, a little arena that was 4x4 or 8 foot. It was an 8-foot arena, quarter-inch leg stand, no top, so it's already hysterical. And we were in this convention, or like a, almost like what you think of like a Dragon Con kind of thing, real early version. Back then there was people in costume. I remember there was a guy dressed like Starbuck, and I was like, what the hell is all this? And we had a bot with a flamethrower on it. It was basically just a butane torch strapped to the top of a RC car.
Awesome.
At one point we had a fire, and people are coming in, there's like a wedding in the next room, and I'm like, oh my god. And but it was a lot of fun again because we had all this weird stuff. Nobody knew, we were still kind of, we didn't know what we were going to win, we didn't care, everybody was just having fun. I had the first tyrant with a chainsaw on it that was totally ineffective, but it was a lot of fun. There was a walking robot at that one, Phelan.
Wow.
It was really cool. It was a shuffler, so it was 24 pounds, and it made this racket when it ran across the plywood, and it was just great. That's online too. That's I got that stuff posted on my YouTube, so if you ever want to check that out.
Now, awesome. Yeah. So what was the thinking behind building an East Coast Robotics Club? I mean, was it to put on events so that local builders didn't have to drive cross country to compete in California every single year?
Exactly. And at that event, that's where I met, at the time it was James Gokey, John Pagano. Ed came on a little bit later, and we were kind of like the founding members. And we said, like, all right, you know, Andrew, he he didn't really want to take it too far, and he's the smartest one of the group because he started this and then stepped away. And the next year at that same show, we had it was actually NERC at the time already, and we had our actual enclosed steel arena, fully enclosed. That's when bots like 911 came around, and I think even Fuzzy had Mini Mauler there. We also started running the events at the hobby show. So, and it just kind of rolled from there. And then we built the big arena because we wanted to run 30-pound bots. And at the time, we just had this group of people in this area, for whatever reason, seemed to be a hotbed of idiots who wanted to do this. And we all just kind of pooled our money together. And we, you know, as we ran a couple events, had some money, we built a new arena. And that's kind of what we've done over the 20 years almost now. We just kind of, we live within our means. We, you know, we don't try to go above 30 pounds because that has proven to be the bubble of being cost prohibitive for a small local event.
Yeah. We both went to Franklin and Motorama in the past year, and both of them were such great events. Motorama, obviously, just 2 weeks ago, where we got to see Blacksmith there in the arena. That was so cool. People coming by, like taking photos of it, like seeing like the LEDs like inside of the bot was really, really cool.
Yeah.
You know, Motorama is just such a great event. Like I'm curious, like how much work goes into putting on an event like Motorama? Like how many volunteers does it take? You know, can you kind of talk us through the logistics of an event that size?
It takes... we have a good core group of dedicated people, and we've always kind of been lucky with that. When some people have to take a step back, and honestly, the last couple of years since BattleBots, that's occupied so much of my time that I've kind of taken a step back. But we have other great people, like, you know, Ed and Beth. They run the events. There'd be no NERC without them. You know, they organize a lot. They actually run the brackets. We have Earl, where the arena is actually stored on Earl's farm in South Jersey.
And oh, wow.
We've always been lucky. At one point, the arena was up in Massachusetts. And the Bensons, because they also had a farm. We have a lot of luck with farm people and who can store the arena. But something they had some life changes, and they were like, oh, we can't keep the arena here. And so we bought a trailer for it, and now it lives on a trailer. And now, luckily, the trailer lives on... you know, Earl's farm. So, you know, without Earl and Ed, you know, there could be no Motorama. And we all get together sometimes if the arena needs maintenance. It's been pretty good for the most part. We just change Lexan every now and then. But yeah, that's just the way it's always been. And we've been very fortunate to have members. And at the events, the members are very good with helping assemble the arena and tear it down. So that's never been a problem. Franklin Institute's a little different. They actually have their own arena.
Sort of.
Yeah, if you were there, you noticed that that's not the same arena. It's also why we only run Sportsman's there, because the 30 pounds pretty much outgrew their box. And they didn't really want to put any money into upgrading. So that's...
I was there for the last Full Combat 30 event, and it did get a little hairy there. It got a little hairy.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Kyle, from my teammate Kyle Crypto, was just throwing, I think he almost threw Charles's bot like right through the wall.
It was Jameson Goh's front wedge on Megatron.
Okay.
And he ripped it off and flung it through the top panel. So panel popped. It didn't come off, but it popped up, and everybody who was around the box watching the fights walked about four steps back.
And that's the point. We did some work on the Moto Arena, and that now has extra Lexan hanging inside. And we instituted the tip speed because it's just crazy how much 30-pound bots started to overpower the arena.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about 250-pound versions of those, and it's amazing.
Speaking of Big Ripto, just as a fan of the Franklin Institute fights and Kyle Singer's work in general, if you ever field a second bot at BattleBots, would you consider a giant Big Ripto? A bigger Ripto?
Absolutely. If if we were to be that nuts and wanted to do two bots, one of them would Yeah, the other one would definitely be a spinner. It would be a drum or a vertical of some sort, or most likely a big Ripto. You know, we've talked about that a lot. What would we do if we weren't doing the hammer? And pretty much anything but a hammer. It's the worst choice you could possibly make. But, yeah, and Kyle's talked about doing a big Ripto of his own, applying on his own. I don't think he's done that this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if in the future you see a Ripto XL of some sort.
Wow.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
So that's actually a good segue to get into talking about Blacksmith, which is hands down one of the most recognizable and popular robots at BattleBots. And so obviously it's known for two things, being incredibly tough and for its very cinematic flaming hammer, which I love. So we have a listener question from Robert on Facebook who asks, I'm sure this has been asked before, but what inspired you to come up with a bot design that screams out, I'm going to make a bot with a hammer that shoots fire?
We sat down and said, what's the worst thing we could possibly do? No. Basically, what happened was the same thing like when I saw Robot Wars on TV. I was totally blindsided that BattleBots was back, and all of a sudden teams were announcing they were going, and Charles was one of them, and I'm like, dude, you didn't even tell me. So as soon as I saw that, I was like, I knew we were going to apply next season because we had to. But we were concerned that since it's on TV, it was ABC, there's an application process now. We were very concerned about getting accepted at all because we were like, you know, we're a bunch of ugly dudes from New Jersey, and, you know, why are they going to accept us? We have to do something a little different. And so I was like, all right, well, let's do a hammer, because people don't do hammers because they're actually a pain in the ass. I had experience with smaller versions, and my 30 was finally to the point where it was working fairly well. And we knew we wanted fire because they like fire is good for TV. And I was like, you know, that'll give us a little edge maybe in the application process. And all of my teammates in separate conversations said, let's put it in the hammerhead. And my response to everyone was like, you're crazy. I was like, how the hell are we going to make fire come out of a hammer that's swinging? So whatever, we put that in the application. It was in the render. And at whatever point it was, I got the phone call, and it was Greg. And the only question he asked me was, is it really going to shoot fire from the hammerhead? And at the time, and I lied, and I said, yes. I didn't think we could do it. I thought I was lying to him. I said, yes. He said, okay. And that was it. That's the only question he asked me about the bot. There was no other discussion about whether we were in or not. And that was it. That's what got us in. So I hung up with Greg, and I called Alan, and I said, now we got to build this thing. And I said, now you got to figure out how to make the fire shoot out of the hammerhead. And he said, don't worry, we'll do it. And he did. And making the fire work is all Alan. He's a genius, and I still barely understand how it works. There's a lot involved, because you got electrical running up the hammer arm, you got the plumbing for the propane, you got igniters in the head, and it's in the item that you're throwing into the other bot's weapon.
Right.
So there was no good idea about any of this. But by Rev 3, it was 100% reliable. And that's awesome, because it was something we no longer had to worry about. At season one and season two, like, it was Alan's full-time job was keeping that fire almost working. First season, it barely worked. It worked in that rumble. And then after that, we had nothing but problems with it. But season two was pretty good, but he had to rebuild the arm every match. And by this last season, it was actually pretty reliable, and it didn't give us much trouble at all.
It's been so reliable that I never really had to stop and question, like, how it works, which I think is a true testament to it. I've never had to sit there and be like, wait, this seems like an incredible engineering feat. Like, how do they actually make it happen? Because it just works, which is really cool. But I can only imagine, like, the sophistication that has to go into it to actually make it do what you know, we've come to know that it does.
It's one of those things that when, you know, we first started thinking about it, and then when you started doing some tests, it's shockingly not easy to make fire with a flammable gas. And you're like, why is this so hard? I go out, like, you know, you press a button, you light your grill, but it's very finicky with the fuel and the air. And then you add in, like I said, you're it's in the spot that you're throwing at the other bot.
Yeah, it's swinging.
All of that comes together, and there's a lot of things that, you know, I talk about the basics sometimes. It's valves, it's propane, it's an ignition system. But that's as far as I'm going to go, because Alan put so much work into it that it wouldn't be fair to share a lot of the secrets that we have. And there are a few that everybody knows, and there's some that we will never share.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, man, I'm so intrigued.
Yeah, the
like
thing
I
that
said, it's you look at the other flamethrowers, and, you know, we're very proud of the fact that I feel ours is the most reliable of all of them.
Yeah, the thing that bends my brain is how you're able to run the wire that's also swinging, you know, like how that doesn't like cut off the wire or like crimp it, like how that wire is able to have kind of like that full range of motion, especially as the hammer head is coming down. Yeah, that's kind of like for me the most mysterious thing about the bot. But seems like that is it's a trade secret, which I totally respect, you know?
I just think about taking a Bic lighter and like trying to light it while I'm swinging my arm and thinking like, you know, that would never work. Not in a million years. So, yeah.
That's really what you're dealing with, too. And the air fuel mixture is very important. So, obviously, when you're throwing that through the air, you're changing that at the same time.
Right.
So, it did take a lot. And the magic part that made it all finally come together perfectly is something that's so simple you would never believe it. But I'm not going to tell you.
I like that.
All right, so Al, in its past 14 fights, Blacksmith has been knocked out only two times, in 2016 by Bronco and last year by Witch Doctor. Both of those were ridiculously fun fights. So this might also be a trade secret, but how on earth did you make Blacksmith so durable in all of its iterations?
It's no one thing. But what I will say is it's more of a combination of all the little things. It's not so much, well, it is all made from AR-500. But if you look at the holes that Rotator and Witch Doctor put in AR-500, that really means nothing if you're not using it properly. It's little things like connections, taping all your connections, how you have your wires routed so they're not going to get hit. One of the new things we actually learned this season that we have to address for the next revision is shrapnel from both our own armor and from the weapon discs of the other bots coming through the frame, shotgunning electronics inside is a new problem we had. It was like it created like a shotgun effect inside the bot, and that's actually what caused our battery fire in the last fight with Witch Doctor. They hit us on the side. It blew right through. And the point where it blew through was quarter-inch AR-500 because we had a double layer of eighth.
Wow.
So that's how powerful – that's how – Witch Doctor is an absolute beast this season. That's the hardest that Blacksmith ever got hit. And it blew right through the armor belt in the bottom, which was quarter-inch, and it threw some shrapnel into our battery box inside, which was also AR-500, but it had spaces cut into it, holes cut into it for weight purposes. We never thought about armoring the battery box inside of our armor.
Right.
But now that's become a thing. Now we're going to have to armor the battery box somehow, either putting the full AR-500 without holes in it for making it lighter or some other thinner. I think even if we sheeted it with some thin chromoly, probably would have been enough, but basically, shrapnel just went right into these soft-sided lipos, and once one went, that was it. But the reason we were able to keep going, I think the outermost pack was on fire, and until they all started to burn, and it burned through our main battery harness, that's when we finally stopped.
You were still getting juice through the system. Oh, that's crazy.
Right, because we're running four packs. So even though the outermost one was fully engulfed, until it burned all the way through and melted the harness, that's when I think we finally lost power. So that's why we were able to keep going. It's things like that. It's you have as much redundancy as you possibly can built into the bot. You know, how much can you lose and keep going And if you ever want to see an awesome example of that, you ever saw the inside of Duck? And while it's not my favorite bot, the design of that bot is incredible as far as compartmentalized. Each system, each drive has its own power source, its own receiver, its own speed controller. It can lose so much. And if you remember in the quantum fight where he was taking bites out of it, they got one or two of those.
Yeah.
It still keeps fighting because it's still, you know, everything else is still powered. And Blacksmith has some of that. We want to try to incorporate some more of that in the next version.
Emulating the redundancy of Hal's bots is definitely not a bad idea. So speaking of AR-500 and Quantum, I wanted to get into that fight just a little bit. That situation seems like a tough call for the refs and the producers. So if you were king of BattleBots, which we all know would be an excellent thing for the sport in general, what rule would you implement in the case of a crusher bot that just cannot release their opponent, like in that situation?
Well, I think it's – and just to give some scope to it, that was a situation that had never happened before. And of course, it's our luck. I mean, Blacksmith never has it easy. We go out there on our first fight and we have something totally bizarre that's never happened before. And to the point of the rules for that season, and I actually haven't looked at them to see if they've changed it, there is nothing in the rules that clearly stated they had to be able to release or they would be disqualified. So there was no rules violated. I would definitely do some sort of rewrite at this point, because obviously they were unable to release and we were unable to get it. It was, I don't know if you heard the story, but we tried to press it out with a hydraulic press and we couldn't press it out. We had to cut the armor around the tooth to finally get it out with the press. So it was insane. It basically creates like a Chinese finger trap. And that once that tooth pushed through, it created barbs in the AR-500, and it was just, there was no way to get it out. And if you're watching that fight where you have the edit where suddenly Blacksmith is free and driving away, that's actually about a 6-hour period.
Wow.
And, right, yeah, because that took place in the first, I think the first session of the event in the morning. Or afternoon, whatever you want to call it. And so our match was up, and we got to the point where we were stuck. They tried to unstick us in the arena with crowbars and stuff. It just wasn't happening. So that was it. They took us out. We went outside. They had to unbolt the tooth from Quantum. We had to unbolt the armor. And we had to go out and, like I said, cut it with a cutoff wheel to finally get the tooth out, give them their tooth back. We bolt our armor back. And by this time, so much time had elapsed that the first session was over.
A very similar situation once happened to me in Applebee's with a skirt steak.
That's true.
Yeah. It was a very tough steak.
Well, I hope they change their rules about it. But yeah, so the second half, the restart of that match actually happened in the night session that day. So that match took about 6 or 8 hours to actually complete.
Wow.
So, and that was our first match of the, you know, so the now famous picture of me, that's me going, you know, thinking to myself, like, this is how this event's going to go already.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, and then, so basically, and you saw what happened again, we got into the, and the funny thing about that first bite, they probably got us in the only spot where they got that far in and hit nothing.
Wow.
The second bite got the hammer speed controller. And at that point, you know, Trey came over and like, oh, what do you want to do? And I said, you know what, Les, let's just call it because this is just going to keep happening and it's going to take 3 days and who knows how much money it's going to cost us every time they bite us. So in retrospect, I should have just called it after the first time and saved everybody a lot of time. But yeah, I mean, it was an unfortunate, weird scenario. And I don't know. I don't know what we would do in the future to combat against that, but it's definitely something we have to plan for.
Yeah, everybody does.
So, Al, it seems like the producers often pit Blacksmith up against the most destructive bots in the show just to see what happens. So in the last few seasons, you faced Minotaur twice, Witch Doctor twice, Bite Force, Rotator, Bronco. Your first fight against Minotaur has more than 17 million views on YouTube. Why do you think they keep giving you these really tough matchups?
because they know that we can take it and we'll put on a good show, I think, is why they do it. I mean, unless Greg hates me, but I mean, we kind of take pride in that. It's, you know, they know that we're going to go out there and we're not going to be one of those one hit and then the bot spinning in circles and then, you know, because that's bad for the show. Nobody wants to see that, because a lot of the things, one of the things that's different about a TV show is every time the cameras are rolling, that's thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Right.
So the last thing you want is to get in the box and one hit and you have both bots dead or one bot dead, that it doesn't give you content. One thing you could almost always count on with Blacksmith is you're probably going to get 3 minutes of good content for the show. And we're trying, I think at this point we kind of got over the fact with this season that for a while I know we were assumed as a gimme, like, oh, if you fought Blacksmith, you were going to win. I think we've kind of got past that a little bit, where it's not a gimme anymore and you're going to have to earn it. And we're proud of that. And we don't want to go out there and fight. I don't even want to name any names because I don't know. We don't want to fight not tough competition. We want, because that's not why we're there. It's if you want to win the nut, eventually you're going to have to fight Paul. You're probably going to have to fight Ray. We fought Rotator and nobody thought we were going to win that one. I didn't think we were going to win that one, and we did.
Yeah.
So you never know inside the box. And a lot of the ways, one of the best ways, the first thing to do to win a match is your bot has to keep working. And if you can do that, you're halfway there.
I want to ask about this very odd sponsor. You're the only BattleBots team to be sponsored by a heavy metal group, which I guess, you know, I wouldn't really think of like a band as being interested in sponsoring Combat Robot, but it works, you know, for Blacksmith. How did that happen? Can you tell us that story?
Well, Nuclear Blast is a record label. It's a heavy metal record label. They're based in L.A. The people that I deal with, Sal and Gerardo at Nuclear Blast, they actually came out to the taping 2 seasons ago. They were actually there for our main event episode with Minotaur. So they were there for a really great, great show. The way that happened is very weird and goes back almost 20 years. I used to go to this second Saturday record show, CD show here in New Jersey. And the reason I went was because there was this guy named Dennis, and he would deal in weird imported heavy metal that I was into that you couldn't get anywhere else. This is pre-internet, you know, everybody can buy anything anywhere. And I don't even know where I found him. But and I became friendly with him. He has his own little record label. He has some small bands on it. And he eventually moved, and I kept in touch with him. And at one point, when I had tried to get Nuclear Blast back in when we first applied, but I couldn't get anyone to respond. You know, who's this guy trying to email, you know, a record label? And I emailed Dennis and I said, hey, you happen to know anybody at Nuclear Blast? And he's like, yeah, why? And I told him the story, and not 24 hours later, I had an email from Gerardo, and we started talking. They loved the idea of the bot, and here we are. And they've been the most amazing, engaged sponsor that you could possibly have. And it's funny how these things work out, and it's been great. We couldn't do it without them. I couldn't afford to do this without all of our sponsors. Nuclear Blast, Klockner Metals providing the steel, the Era 500. I mean, Blacksmith, every event is about $5,000 of just the steel.
Wow.
So it's, yeah, and heavyweights add up really quickly, and we have a habit of breaking a lot of it. So every season you're putting thousands, thousands and thousands of dollars into it. But yeah, without our sponsors, we couldn't do this.
A related question from Nelly the Ellibot teammate Rara, who asks, how much does your love of rock/metal influence your design and aesthetics choices with Blacksmith?
I think it absolutely shows through with Blacksmith in particular. It's not that we sit down and say, all right, we want the bot to look like this. We design the bot the way it needs to be designed around the components and how we want to have it laid out. Going back to the durability, we design a certain way to have certain components laid out the way they are. And then we try to follow that with, like, all right, well, how does the bot look now that we've done that? and the latest, the most recent version is a little bit more boxy than the previous one, and we were a little concerned that it wasn't going to look cool enough. But I think once they got the paint job on there, and John, my teammate John, who's been with me since day one, he's a graphic artist. He does all the painting, he makes the designs and has all the stickers made, and he does an incredible job. The t-shirts, that's why we have the best t-shirts. It's all because of John. And I do think it's a total package, though. You have to have that. It's again, because it's a TV show, especially. You have to have an image. It has to look good as well as perform. And I think Blacksmith does pull that all together, especially with the fire and the heavy metal record label sponsor. It's if you sat down and said, what would be the most metal bot, a bot that shoots fire from a hammer?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone could deny that. I mean, the way it all came together was kind of accidental, but it works. And, you know, and we're proud of that too. I think, you know, it's a really cool image, and, you know, we have a lot of fun with it.
Now, that image is so popular and so iconic that Hexbugs ended up building a Blacksmith toy. You can purchase it at any Target across the country. I bought the 2-pack with Blacksmith and with Bite Force, kind of immortalizing that fight that the two of you had. How did the Hexbugs thing happen? Can you talk us through what it's like seeing your combat robot turned into a toy for lots and lots of young fans?
That's great. I mean, and that's one of my joke comments that I've been making, but it really becomes more and more true as it goes along. I say the Blacksmith has a way of winning without winning. We may not win the nut. We may not win a lot of fights, but here we have the Hexbug chose us to make a toy out of. But of all the bots, all the great bots, there's only a handful that have actually had a Hexbug made. And that's incredible. And I still can't believe that they picked us for that. And it took a lot. It was probably about a year from the time I first knew about it to the time it was released. They start talking to you. And actually, my first contact was through a Facebook friend request. And I'm like, who's this guy? I have no idea who this was. And I looked at his profile and I was like, oh, it's a guy from Hexbug. I was like, oh, wouldn't that be cool? So I started chatting with him. And sure enough, that's why he contacted me, because they were doing a Hexbug. And it's actually built off of the CAD, the SolidWorks. And so it's accurate. The accuracy is 100% because it's built from the actual CAD of that actual version of Blacksmith. So that's really cool. It literally looks like the real one. And for me, at least, I don't think it really hit me until I walked into Target the one day and when I saw him on the shelf. And that's an amazing feeling, that something that you poured your heart and soul into and your team and it's something you can say, look, you know, somebody thought we were cool enough to make this. And I it's hard to describe that. It's just, we're so proud of that.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It's an amazing toy, by the way. Like, it's the only Hammerbot that Hexbug makes that can self-write. So if you're fighting Bronco, it's the go-to.
I wish the real weren't that good.
Is there any way to modify it to add fire?
Not safely.
I haven't gotten around to that. But, in the early design phase, when we were chatting, it's like we wanted to put at least do an LED up in the hammerhead, but just the logistics of that it's too small, and it would add too much complexity and expense to the toy, so that got squashed early on.
Yeah. So Timothy from Facebook asks, have you ever thought, screw it, I'm going to build a vertical spinner?
Every time we lose. You know, like I said, it all goes back to, we wanted to do something different at first. And don't get me wrong, we still believe that we can win with this bot. And we're going to keep trying to do that. We are not going to scrap Blacksmith and show up in 2021 with a drum, because that's just not our style. It is what it is. We are Blacksmith, and I think that's just how we're going to play it.
Nelly the Elliebot Captain Sarah Malian asks, what else is terrible besides hammers?
Elephants.
That was pretty quick.
That was quick.
All right. We'll follow that one up with a question from Joel, who asks, what is your favorite thing about millennials?
Oh, boy.
That we're getting to the point where we're almost done with them.
We have just a couple more listener questions. These are a bit more serious. Cameron asks, is there one matchup that you would have wanted to have last season that didn't happen?
To be honest, we go into every season assuming we're going to get Tombstone first.
Yeah.
And as of yet, it hasn't happened. I do think that match is inevitable. And as horrible as that could be quickly, it's honestly one of the matches that we do look forward to. I feel it has to happen someday. I don't know if we're ready for it. We have plans. Every season we've had a front end that we built basically for Ray. And the one we had this previous season was the best one we had. But after our match with Shredderator, I don't think it would have worked. It had some design flaws. So I think we might be ready by the next version, as ready as anyone could be to fight Tombstone, though. It's just so much energy that it's really hard to, especially with a bot like ours. I mean, we have a lot of weight tied up in weird things, you know, the hammer and the fire, and it's really hard. It's hard to take that hit from Ray. It's just, you look forward to it and you dread it at the same time, I think.
Another fan, Jake, asks, what are some of your favorite moments from the last few seasons?
Oh, favorite moments or horrible moments? honestly, I think one of our best fights that we've ever had was the Sawblaze match.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was so good.
Yeah.
That was the moment, I think, where Blacksmith really finally came together. We had tried some new things. We were trying a new new control layout where we split up the hammer and drive completely. Up until this season, I had always driven and done the hammer, and Alan has done the fire. We split it up even further this season where I concentrated solely on driving. I switched to a pistol grip to see how that would work. Alan now does the hammer, and John does the fire system, because the flame system itself is three channels, so that's a whole other nightmare in its own. So it's way too much for even two people to do the way we have it split up. So we actually have three operators now, and one being just for the flame system. But anyway, I think that made a big difference, and I think you could see it in that match. My driving was a little better. I still have a long way to go. We have some drive tweaks we have to make, but JMO is amazing. His aggression is, I've always admired him, because I always say that I think of anyone else, he's one of the few people that can match my intensity when it comes to competing, and his driving ability. And Sawblaze is also one of my favorite bots, because it's not just a spinner, it's not just a drum, it's different. It has more personality. It's like Blacksmith in that way. And that match was also, I think, inevitable. That match almost happened in season 3. But something weird had happened. The match was actually made. We were going to fight Sawblaze. And something happened, and for whatever reason, the schedule got flip-flopped, and that's when we ended up fighting Witch Doctor the first time.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
Right, so the Sawblaze match was supposed to happen, so we knew that match was coming because for whatever reason, they wanted that match. And I do think it happened at a great time. I think it's a much better match when it happened than it would have been the season before. I think he would have ran right through the season 3 Blacksmith. but I think this Blacksmith is, it's, I say this every version because it's true, it's the best Blacksmith we've ever put in the box. It obviously has, it still needs some improvement, but Sawblaze and Blacksmith are a very interesting match for each other, where neither one is really capable of knocking out the other. So as a result, you get 3 minutes of chaos, you get fire, and I think that's really good TV.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you have my emotional stupidity at the end, where we thought we had that match won and we didn't. And, you know, I think that's all excellent TV. And yeah, I just, that was, I think that's one of the standout matches for us. That's, you know, that's always that. And I think the Rotator match where I don't, we went in expecting to lose. I think everybody expected us to lose and we just kind of squeaked that one out somehow. And those are all things that I think make for interesting TV as well, where you can't predict what's going to happen in this. Anybody can beat anybody on the right day. And I already forgot which question I'm even answering now.
Yeah, some of your favorite moments.
Oh, so that's good. So that works.
Yeah. by far our the question that the most number of people asked us, so we've consolidated down into just a single question from super fan Ike. He really loves Blacksmith a lot. Ike asks, why, Al, why? Tell me why you aren't in the 2020 season of BattleBots. Blacksmith is the most cool and unique robot and gets better every year. So what can we tell Ike?
Wow, Ike, thank you so much for those kind words. I mean, that really does mean a lot to us, to the team. Let me start by saying this. Not one of us on my team wants to not be there this season. It's just that several of the team members, myself included, we have some personal reasons, family reasons that just make it impossible for us to be there, not only be there this season, but to be able to put in the time that's required leading up to the season. Because, you know, one of the things that maybe we can talk about is while the event itself is about 2 weeks, a little bit more than 2 weeks, it begins really in November or December with planning, doing CAD, talking, having meetings, buying components. And then once January hits, it becomes, we all work full-time jobs, so we work all week, and then Saturday and Sunday, John and Alan are in my garage grinding and welding and building. And we're doing that until we leave in end of March. And then we have the event for 2 weeks. And that's just, the event itself is a grind. And then by the time you fly home, it's over. And by the time you realize it, it's May. And you lift your head up and you realize you've been doing this since December. And you've lost a third or a quarter of your year. And you've been doing that for the last 3-4 years.
Yeah.
So it's a lot to ask of my team. And I'm nothing without them. And I refuse to just get different people to go with me.
Yeah.
This is my team. I will not do this without my team as it is right now. They deserve that. And secondly, we are not done. We are not retiring. Blacksmith is not done. We will be back in 2021. And what rendition that will be is still up in the air. If it will be a full new revision, which is already being talked about and designed, or a updated version of the current one. And that's going to depend on how much time we're going to have. As I said, some of the personal reasons are people have started new jobs and their availability isn't what it needs to be for a full-on new rev is a lot of work. And that's where we are. I mean, it's yeah. just, it happens. But on the plus side, as you guys know, from talking to Greg, you have Ghost Raptor, Ice Wave, these other bots that are coming back, Chomp. So that's, I think that's great too. And, you know, if a couple bots need to step back for a season, other bots come back in, and I think that's good. That'll keep it fresh too. But like I said, we fully intend to be back and better than ever.
Yeah, the really remarkable thing about the sport is that nobody's really making a lot of money with it. I mean, I guess maybe Greg and Trey are making a lot of money, but you know, like there's more than 100 builders who show up every single year, and at very best, the best that they can hope for is that they break even and they don't lose too much money. And when you take a look at how much time and money and energy and thought and just like vacation time that goes into the show. It really is like a passion project for most of the builders.
Right. And that's all part of it too. Like you mentioned vacation time, because it's basically all your vacation time is done in April. So that's a part of it. Family time. You know, my teammates have kids, and you know, for that quarter of a year, they don't remember what their father looks like because they're in my garage every weekend. And the money wise, yeah, absolutely. That's, I don't know how many people have a concept of what it is, but these things get expensive very quickly. And you're right. I would consider breaking even a huge win.
Yeah.
And I think we might have finally done that this past season. I'm still working on the math for that. But just to put it into perspective, and I think Blacksmith is probably a mid-range to average cost bot. This season, you're probably talking between $14,000 and $15,000.
Wow.
To have that's Blacksmith ready to fight with all the spares. Luckily, a lot of that comes back in sponsors. But so yeah, if you don't have good sponsors, at least in my case, my team, we could not afford to keep laying out this kind of money. So even to win the event, you know, even Paul, I don't think Paul's really making money doing this. He might break even, but yeah, there's not a lot of money in it right now. So that's why we need everybody to watch and get their friends to watch. If we start getting some huge ratings, then maybe we can get some money to spread around.
All right, Al, before we let you go, I have a couple of questions that I'd like to ask you to wrap my head as a metal fan around you. And I'd hope that you'd be able to, jump through five quick questions. Do you have time for that?
Yeah.
All right. Ready?
Sure.
Blind Guardian or Nightwish?
Blind Guardian.
Iron Maiden or Judas Priest?
Ooh, now that's getting tougher.
They are going to get tougher.
Iron Maiden, and I will add that my first concert ever was Iron Maiden.
Awesome.
Nice.
Mine was Michael Bolton, but that's for another day.
Hey, you know what? He's not bad.
That's the quote. Slayer or Metallica?
Ooh, old Slayer or old Metallica?
Yes.
Metallica. But only Ride the Lightning and older.
Black Sabbath or Motorhead?
Black Sabbath.
All right, last one. NSYNC or Backstreet Boys?
Menudo.
Yes. The only right answer.
Al, you had me at Blind Guardian. Thanks for joining us. This was an incredible interview. We really appreciate you giving us so much of your time.
No problem. Anytime.
After the break, this week's Combat Robotics event calendar.
Welcome back from the break. Time for this week's Combat Robotics event calendar. This weekend, we've got events in Ohio, Australia, and Brazil. First up, on Saturday in Columbus, Ohio, it's MakerX Columbus Combat, organized by the National Robotics Challenge. There, they're going to be fighting antweights and beetleweights. Also on Saturday in Ipswich, Australia, it's February Fantasy, with an emphasis on ant.
Ant, yeah.
Fantasy, organized by the Ipswich Robotics Sports Group, where they will be fighting antweights.
And dragons.
And finally, in Santa Rita do Sapucaí, Forgive me, Brazilians. It's in Brazil. It's one of the biggest combat robotics competitions of the year, the Iron Cup 2020. This three-day event starts on Friday and ends on Sunday and is organized by RoboCorps. In the combat robotics arena, they'll be fighting fairy weights, ant weights, and beetle weights, but they'll also be competing with sumo bots, line-following robots, robot trekking, and, get this, robots that play soccer.
That's like my favorite thing to watch on YouTube. Do you ever watch these YouTube videos of robots playing soccer?
No.
Okay, if you've ever been worried that the robots are going to come and, like, steal our soccer jobs or, I don't know, like, chase us down the street, just just watch it. It, you know, just kind of puts your mind to
rest. I'm willing to bet that every single one of those robots can play soccer better than I can.
that's right.
Yeah. Wait, so are they, like, bipedal?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
So can you bring one of those to BattleBots and, like, slap a...
You wouldn't want to. Okay.
No.
You gotta watch these. These are so good.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, go to Brazil and check that out.
I mean, listen, it's all fun and games now, but in 10 years...
Oh, like, we're all dead.
Yeah, no, you're going to see these freakish, like, just torso-less running legs that can sprint across a soccer pitch at, like, 80 miles an hour and just play soccer with devastating efficiency, all right? That's coming, but it's not here now. Mm. Right now, it's still pretty funny to watch on YouTube.
Enjoy this, like, little lull while you can, because it's not going to end well.
No. Oh, no. 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 Definitely not. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, definitely don't put weapons on those things then, because, I mean, that's it then.
Yeah, so that about wraps it up for us today. Scott, if you're out there, Al Kindle wanted us to say hi. We'll be back in your feed next Wednesday with another mystery guest. So we'll see you then.
See ya.
Have a great week.
Bye-bye.